powered from the Sereno Cigar Company studios in North Carolina, and broadcasting live from the Ventura Cigar Company studio in California, and live from Tailored Smoke in downtown Charlotte's epicenter. Welcome to episode 64 of the Primetime Show. Tonight, Justo Arroyo is our special guest as we talk JRE tobacco, horses, and Aaron and I will then do a segment this week on low cigar scoring. And this episode of the Primetime Show is sponsored by Saga Cigars. Every new blend borrows from the past, and the Saga Blend Number 7 has done just that. It's the perfect combination of timeless knowledge in traditional tobaccos and the newer balance that today's cigar enthusiasts come to expect and love in a finer cigar. Leveraging six generations of experience in the tradition of the Reyes family, the Saga Blend Number 7 delivers a full-flavor, medium-bodied cigar. The cigar is highlighted by a Brazilian wrapper over a blend of Central American and Dominican tobacco. Available in three sizes at an affordable price, the Saga Blend Number 7 is sure to please and bring together past and present. And by JRE Tobacco, the authentic Corojo leaf is one of the most robust and flavorful leaves out there. During the golden age of cigars in Cuba, it was the leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Because it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate, it fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Hamastron Valley in Honduras, Julio A. Arroa took on the challenge of growing Corojo from the original seeds. And in 2000, he reintroduced authentic Corojo back into the market. With over 50 years' experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the Arroa Tobacco Farm has been able to deliver products to market with authentic Corojo. Now at JRE Tobacco, Julio and his son Justo bring their very own brand to market, each containing the authentic Corojo leaf. Tata Scan offers a mild to medium cigar in both Connecticut and Habano wrapper. Rancho Luna is a premium medium cigar available in Habano and Maduro. And Aladino is available in a 100% authentic Corojo Puro or San Andreas Maduro, representing the golden age of cigars from 1947 to 1961. Now available at your local retailer, be sure to ask for JRE Tobacco, a legacy that is tasted in every drawer. And you can find JRE Tobacco here at Tailored Smoke, located in the heart of downtown Charlotte's epicenter. Tailored Smoke is your one-stop shop for a tailored smoking experience. Welcome, everybody. This is episode 64 of the Primetime Show. Will Cooper, I am in downtown Charlotte in the epicenter. This is right in the center of downtown Charlotte, the geographic center, at Tailored Smoke. This is a fantastic location in downtown Charlotte. If you are in Charlotte, it's a must-go destination. And we're broadcasting episode 64 of the Primetime Show. I'm joined cross-country by my friend and colleague, Mr. Aaron Loomis.
How you doing, Will?
I'm doing really good. I've been going since 7 o'clock this morning. I'm wired right now. I'm pumped for the show. But I'm real excited tonight. And so far, I guess everything is going good. I mean, it looks like the broadcast is going, and you always worry with a live remote that things could go wrong. I started setting up at like 8:15, so.
Yeah, everything seems really going good. So I think we're on a good start.
Yep. No, so it's great, and we got a great show here. What we're going to do is we're going to get right into our featured segment here. We are joined, finally, on the Primetime Show by Mr. Justo Arroa. Justo?
Hey, great seeing you again, Will. I really love seeing you. You're actually the first person I interviewed with. And Aaron, thank you for also hosting us. So yeah. Thank you so much to both of you.
Welcome to Primetime. I got to say that.
Thank you.
Real podcast?
Real podcast.
Real podcast. There you go. Okay, you heard it from the man. Real podcast. So we got this remote going, though. It's kind of a little interesting to set this up, but it works. So, but no, great to have you here. I remember when I interviewed you, and I remember the date very well. It was in May of 2016, and that morning we got the news of the FDA regulations on May 5th.
Yes. Time flies.
Time flies. And we had to do this interview with Justo back on Stogie Geeks. And I was like, how are we going to do this interview? Because the bottom had just dropped out, Aaron. Yeah. I had drove up to Rhode Island, actually. I was doing the show from there. And Justo came on. He knocked it out of the park. So I'm really glad to get him on here.
Well, I don't know if out of the park, but I gave it my best shot.
Yeah.
I was nervous.
You're great. I've heard you on podcasts. You're great.
Well, I hope so. I try. Yep. I try my best.
Yeah. So, Justo, you've had a very, I'd say, interesting journey into the cigar business. You obviously come from a tobacco family, one of the premier ones in the world. But you you didn't kind of quite go into the cigar business right away. You kind of took a different route in.
Well, you know, being in Honduras and also being an agronomist as a trademark, I graduated in 87 from Zamorano. You know, there was a period before the boom that the tobacco industry was suffering a little bit, and, you know, we didn't have the boom. And, you know, my dad diversified the farm into a cattle operation. We also had a dairy operation. We produce milk, we produce cheese, we produce, orange juice. And, you know, I kind of helped them there, but I was still young, going through a transition of finishing up college. And then the cigar boom came in, and then, you know, I came back. I graduated, you know, from Zamorano, went to K-State, and then came back and helped them run the dairy operation. And then at the same, and then also helped them started growing a lot of sorghum and products for Cargill growing for Cargill, and also helped my dad a lot in the operation of the tobacco. I prepared all the equipment, and I helped him out. So him and I have always been strongly involved in the agriculture side. And then my wife and I also started a water business in 93. So both things were running parallel. So actually, you know, one got bigger than the other one, in my case, was the water business. And then also the boom came in. So, you know, I was caught between both operations. So it was something that required a lot of time, and it was a slow transition. And, you know, you always, you know, the future, you never write the future. It just comes to you, and all of a sudden I'm back with my father, which is one of the things, you know, we always wish to work with him. And, you know, things are we're back together, and we're trying to continue the legacy of the farm operation and growing tobacco for cigar consumers.
Hey, Aaron, could you go for a second?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So a question I have a lot of times for people that grew up in a tobacco family, at what age did you smoke your first cigar?
Well, I remember as a very young kid. I was probably, you know, we have a lot of firecrackers. We light firecrackers all the time during Christmas time. I've probably been about 10 or 11 years old. And, you know, I got a cigar so I could light firecrackers because they would last more than a cigarette.
Right.
and believe me, for some reason or other, I guess I got drunk on a cigar.
Right.
and for that, for a while, then it took me a while to get back into cigars. Maybe, you know, I was never too much of a continuous smoker, because a lot of times I tried cigars after we did the harvest, or we were trying the tobacco and trying the leaves. So I wasn't that much of a smoker. Because I was not in the part of the retail would require me to smoke a lot of the cigars and test with the other guys. And then also working in a separate business, in the water business, kind of had me a little bit separate from, you know, smoking daily, you know, cigars. And even my dad, you know, he smokes a lot, but he smokes maybe a quarter of an inch of a cigar, because he always tries to see how the cigars from the factory and the production, and how the aging of the tobacco, you know, is coming in the pilones, and, you know, how the different blends will work. So, you know, it's something that, you know, unless you're out on the retail side, you know, you will smoke more cigars. But it's a pastime that I really have enjoyed, and really helps me, you know, relax and not only relax, but at the same time be able to enjoy cigars and meet a lot of friends and engage.
Right. And so when was the first time that you kind of sat down with your dad and your dad kind of gave you a cigar to kind of smoke with him? When did that happen? What was that experience like?
Well, believe it or not, you know, he probably gave me cigars before when I wasn't too involved. But now that, you know, I would say it's got to be lately. You know, I would say it's been here in the last 3 or 4 years where, you know, because in a way we kind of worked together, but we had separate paths in since we had different business ventures, and our water business grew to a dimension that required more full time. And now I really enjoy, because I guess I am more mature in our relationship. You know, I sitting with him and smoking cigars now has got to be probably the best time of my lifetime smoking with him. So it's recent, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, three or four years ago.
Yeah. And with the knowledge that your father has, you know, I'm assuming it's not the same as if you were just smoking with a buddy and you guys are just enjoying the cigar. Like, does your dad have, like, does he break down stuff for you, like when you guys are kind of smoking together and things like that, or how does that work?
Well, you know, my dad has got so much experience, and he is, believe it or not, he's very creative, and but he still remembers a lot of the industry, you know, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, when a lot of the sizes that, you know, were very common, you know, like, you know, the Coronas, you know, the Longsdales, smaller gauge ring cigars, you know, he remembers those times. And since he sold the operation to Davidoff Camacho, what happened was, you know, there's a lot of been changes for the last 8 or 9 years. I mean, you know, now the dominant is Robusto, Toros, and even larger gauges have gotten into the market, that for him it's hard to adjust. So, you know, and understand, but, you know, that's the way the market, it does. It evolves and everything. So it's a little bit different. So he's learning.
Yep. Apologize, guys. I wanted to just make sure we were okay and everything was okay. So, you know, with the live remote, you get a little nervous sometimes. I saw that pinwheel that we saw last time, and I got nervous.
Yeah.
So I had to go check it. So, interesting part, though, of how you guys started the company was Aladino actually was there. These brands, Aladino, Rancho Luna, Tadascan, they were actually there before JRE Tobacco was officially launched.
Yes.
They actually started with your brother. They or through your brother's
absolutely,
operation.
Absolutely. Well, my dad and I had been working on getting back together. But my dad and I are pretty have personalities pretty similar.
Uh-huh.
So having personalities pretty similar, you know, it's like magnets, you know, positive right. repel. And right. you know, also, so, but I guess as you mature and you get older, you know, you learn to understand. And I have, and I have learned that, you know, it's better to listen.
Yes.
And learn from him because he knows a lot. And the other thing that also has taught me a lot is, you know, for some reason, and you know it real well, working in corporate, you know, it structures you to
yes.
understand and listen.
Yep.
And I think, you know, it's just, you know, I'm a very faithful person. So I think it's just a kind of a
right.
destiny of, that God set a path and got me to for him and I to work together. He really intervened, and, you know, because, you know, I always wanted to continue with him. And for some reason, everything just clicked. It's
right.
just something that didn't happen.
Right.
So the brands did exist. Yeah, it was a plan for us to start working before, but we weren't able to get together. I was doing extremely well in corporate. I was like I said, I worked for Campbell Soup and worked in Latin American division, and I managed, you know, big accounts. So, you know, worked with the Castillo Group in Guatemala, a co-packer that also knows they're a $2 billion group.
Yeah,
that was my distributor, and I learned a lot. And it wasn't the time for me to leave there. I was
yeah.
still learning and maturing. As an executive, I would say, or a professional running business. But the time came.
But in the meantime, the brands got a little bit of a head start with Christian. Was that the
yeah,
idea?
Well, I guess since I didn't come on board, Christian took over.
Right.
And it was a launch. I think he did in 2015 at the
yep.
trade show, and then after that, things, you know, my dad and I worked out, and then I took over, I think, is what, 2016 at the trade show, but the Ladino wasn't ready yet. So, you know, it was a very soft launch. And actually, this is our full throttle. This is our second year, and, you know, running a brand as JRE, and we're extremely happy. And I think he's also very happy. Things are moving in the right direction, and we're getting exposure. I mean, you're part of it, you know, and it's been great. It's been phenomenal.
I remember when you and I first talked on the phone, and we were talking, and I think I said the words JRE Cigar Company, and you quickly, in a nice way, corrected me and said it's JRE Tobacco.
Correct.
And that was something that was very important, and I know you weren't trying to step on me, but that's important to you. So why don't you explain a little about that?
Well, it's, you know, the corporation is JRE Cigars, but the DBA is JRE Tobacco.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So you see, it's correct. But I changed to JRE Tobacco because I'm a true believer. You know, the problem is, you always say when you're born in the farm, you got the farm in you.
Right.
And we're a tobacco company. You know, we're a grower of tobacco that manufactures cigars. And a lot of people will say, well, I'm a cigar company that sells cigars. No, we are a tobacco company that actually makes cigars. And, you know, we pride ourselves in producing, you know, my personal opinion, but at the same time, I'm biased, is, you know, great tobacco. You know, we do things right. We have invested to do things right, you know, in at a scale that we become professional growers. And that is translated in the quality of the tobacco that is being used in our cigars. And that's why we call ourselves GRE Tobacco Company, because we're a tobacco company that specialize that makes cigars.
Sure. Now, every week we read the ad for GRE Tobacco, and we talk about this every week, authentic Corojo. And, you know, a lot of cigar smokers, they love Corojo. But Aroas prided themselves on the authentic Corojo. What is, for folks in Manhattan, what is authentic Corojo?
Well, you know, all plants, it's got, you know, to simplify it, in agronomic terms, are different varieties of tobacco.
Right.
Like, you know, there are different breeds of dogs, or German Shepherds, or Chihuahuas, and, you know, they're different.
Right.
So one of the most known varieties in Cuba back in the 40s and 60s was the Corojo leaf. The Corojo leaf is a unique variety that it's got such tremendous flavor that, you know, you could taste that in our cigars. And that's what actually made the Cuban cigars so, you know, to reach that notoriability in taste, it was the Corojo leaf. And nobody today, like you said, it fell out of favor because it's very hard to grow. It's very low yielding. You know, you only get 7 primings at max, you know, to get it right. And, you know, we have actually specialized in that. But we have invested a lot in you know, drip irrigation system, best practice management, you know, with, you know, teaming up with Bayer Crop Sciences to do things right. So, you know, that is something that requires a lot of effort, and also requires, you know, commitment to do, you know, not take the easy path of, you know, finding other varieties, because we were known for that. We created brands with that. We created a taste profile that people really like, and it's something that is unique in our cigars.
We also talk about, when we read that spot, how if the authentic Corojo leaf, it vanished for a while, and, you know, in at least, you know, or fell out of favor.
Absolutely. You know,
why did that happen?
Well, you had, you know, the climate changes a lot. You know, we had a lot of climate changes, and then, you know, we had a lot of blue mold. You know, we had a lot of extension of cold weather. You had rainy seasons and, you know, the perfect storm. So it just basically wiped out all the crops. And then Cuba started developing crossbreeds of the original variety with Habano or Criollos. And then, you know, the 98 and the 2000 came out, which actually were more resistant to the blue mold. At the same time, when you hybridize a line, not only you get more resistance, but sometimes you get better yields. And that's how you do in corn. You know, you cross one variety, and then you'll get another variety, and then one will be resistant to drought. And, you know, but in this case, you know, you get resistance to mold, and they required a leaf to substitute Corojo. But, you know, even though it was more resistant, you were able to get crops and more yields. The flavor profile kind of diluted itself.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, you know, you guys got it back. I think you mentioned a couple of things that you've done or your dad's done on the farm to ensure that Corojo could be resistant to these types of disease. What are some of those things?
Well, basically, you need to change agronomic tactics. I mean, the way you plant, maybe you give it a little bit more space, and also, you know, you grow a little bit off season. You know, you don't grow in the normal season. You know, a lot of times we used to grow it, you know, November, we already had crops there. But now that's where you get the cold weather, and, you know, you get a lot of, cloudiness or something like that. So it's,
yep.
So it creates a perfect environment to grow mold. So you have to change seasons. You have to change spacings. You have to change the way you irrigated the plants. You have to invest in drip irrigation. And we, you know, so we did a lot of changing, but a lot of it is also the time that we change, the time we would grow.
And drip irrigation, I remember when you were showing it to me, it's not cheap.
No, there's a lot of investment in doing it, and there is also, you know, you can use the drip irrigation hoses probably, you know, 3 or 4 years, and then you have to replace them. So it's a lot of expense that goes into it. But I guess if you are willing to expend them, because we believe that it's important for our cigars to have that characteristic of that Corojo leaf.
And it's also, I remember you were saying, it's a more efficient way with the water, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's more efficient because the water is actually going into the nutrients are going into the plant.
Absolutely. Not only is it, it's a cleaner to work because, you know, you're actually irrigating the base of the plant. And then also you fertilize through this fertigation. You fertilize through the hose system, too.
We're talking with Justo Arroyo live from Tailored Smoke in downtown Charlotte's Epicenter. And we were just talking about the Aroha Tobacco Farm. And in addition to having a farm, you have also a factory located pretty much right next door.
Yeah, we're very close.
Yeah.
And it's very convenient. I mean, I think it's probably the best thing for my dad because, you know, Will, he gets up early in the morning, he goes, checks out the farm, goes back to the factory. So he is really enjoying. He's like, you know, like he's got a lot of activities that he's got to go through.
He drives that car, the Geo.
Yeah, he drives the Geo. As a matter of fact, he got a new Geo. Same year, 89.
And he's still driving an 89. He's driving. So this titan of the cigar industry is driving this Geo. And love it.
Well, you know, it's comfortable for him. Yeah. He's able to get into the tobacco barns with it. And, you know, it's a soft car.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he had a plane accident in 78. And, you know, so he might hurt his back. So he even lowers a little bit of less air in the tires, so it's not that bumpy.
Right.
So you know, it is just a wonderful car for him, and he loves it. You know, he's very. And when you see him, you know, he's just
he's full of energy.
He's got more energy than my brother and I together.
Yeah, I saw that. I literally saw that firsthand there. But you have the factory there too, and all your production's done in house.
Yes, everything is done in house, and you know we like. There are some leaves, as you know, that we buy that we haven't been able to master the growing of it, and you know, there's, you know, that's okay,
right? And then of course, you know, fully, you know, you are fully seed to shop. Obviously, the distribution piece, which you've been focused on the last couple of years, right now building this piece up here.
Correct. So you know, when you have an operation like that, that's got that amount of production capacity as a tobacco producer. We need to have an outlet, and that outlet is creating our own brands. And now we're also starting to open up our tobacco warehouse of finished tobacco, filler, binder, wrapper to start selling some of that to some other manufacturers. So you know we're slowly building a clientele, and we're getting out there to be a multi-phase company that we will sell raw material. We also sell cigars.
When your dad sold Camacho, he took some time off, but he sold the, we were talking about this before, and he sold the brands. He didn't sell the operation.
Yes. When he sold Camacho is basically the idea was to continue, you know, providing tobacco and everything like to the buyer. And, you know, for some reason or another, you know, they decided to change that, and we still have that the tobacco operation in a way to, out, you know, start selling your tobacco to manufacture cigars again. So that's one of the reasons we came back into the business. And plus, that's his life. I mean, he really enjoys being a farmer, and that's what I like too. So, but for now, I got to create a brand and develop that demand for the tobacco. So that's why I say that we're going to be hopefully not only creating and growing our brands, but also finding some consumers for our tobacco, which is great tobacco.
Yep, that's true. I remember when I was also at the factory, you have a lot of room for expanding your production. So
you saw, I don't know if you went to one of the warehouse, but that has already got tables ready set up for rollers. So he said, hey, I could be, you know, double or triple in 6 months.
Right.
But, you know, we don't want to be a one of those big operations like we were in the past, because you lose control, and we want to keep control. And I think one of the things that we want to do today is be consistent with quality, and you'll be able to see that. And every time you light one of our cigars, whatever brand that you take, whether it is, you know, the Aladino, the Rancho Luna, or the Tatascan, consistency and manufacturing quality is one of the things that we want to be consistent on. And you do that, you know, in medium scale, we're able to do it right, and especially have the proper aged tobacco to back up all the needs.
Yeah, that's true. When you say medium scale, what types of numbers are you thinking of?
Well, I would say, you know, in the future, if we were to do between 2.5 and 5-6 million cigars, is something that is fairly medium.
So let's get a little into the brands. We started talking about it already. Aladino is your signature brand. Where does the name Aladino come from?
Well, Aladino, I kind of took a different spin to it. My dad actually, you know, Aladino is Aladdin, you know, the genie from the lamp. And the movie theater next to the house where I grew up in Dan Lee was called Aladino. And it's a great magical name because basically you go into the movie and transport you to different parts of the world and you kind of live a dream of what's going on. And so I think that's where my dad got the name, but he also likes the genie idea. As a matter of fact, he wanted me to put I think you saw the picture of the Aladino and put it in the boxes.
Yeah.
And as a cartoon character. But actually, Aladino for him and for me now is bringing those cigar smokers to that experience of 47 and 61, a real Cubanistic cigar. So Aladdin brings you to that experience. And that's the spinoff that we have in Aladino brand.
Okay, very interesting. And, you know, this is we'll talk about it in a little bit, but I think we're all smoking the Aladino.
Oh, yes.
Corojo.
Yes. Yeah, I gotta probably relight because, yeah, I mean, we're talking.
That's okay. We're all smoking the Robusto there. Talk a little about this cigar. What, obviously, I mean, it's 100% Corojo.
Oh, absolutely. This is one of the cigars that is, people always tell me, what do you smoke? Do you smoke light, medium, or full? This is actually a very versatile cigar that, you know, a light to medium smoker can smoke it because it's very smooth, very clean, but also a medium to full smoker. So it's got such flavor that we do. This cigar is all done with Biso and Seco. We don't use it in the Hero. But a wrapper and binder and filler are so well aged, and the Corojo gives you so much flavor and so much. It's that characteristic of the Corojo leaf that allows you to experience something different in your palate. And this is actually that cigar. You know, it's an everyday cigar for basically anybody to smoke. And you know, we're trying to move with the Aladino brands. If you see, we have a lot of small gauges to move to traditional sizes. You know, traditional sizes bring you much more flavor and a different smoking experience than the larger ring gauges.
Yeah, the two I've really gravitated to are a little more the connoisseur sizes, the Cazadores and the Elegante, obviously the two.
Oh, yeah, Lancero, yeah, that, yeah. You know, with number two cigar with you,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful. It's believe it or not, I think it's between the Corona and the Lancero, they're fighting for our third best selling SKU.
Which is the best selling SKU right now?
Right now is the Toro.
Okay.
Toro is the dominant.
Right.
You know, I guess across the industry is the dominant one.
Right.
But our Lancero, you know, MSRP is at $7, the natural one, and $7.50 the Maduro. And one of the reasons we're doing that because we want people to gravitate to those sizes.
Right.
And that, you know, manufacturing our Elegante requires skills, consistency. You'll have a perfect draw on every single cigar. And that's one of the challenges of, you know, making that 38 ring gauge.
Right. And the one thing I remember as you were kind of developing the brand, the inner box art, which we should have had a box here. I should have grabbed a box, but the inner box art, which really, when I remember when you put that on there and showed it to me, I said, that's going to pop. And I think it's really popped with a lot of people.
Oh, well, it's an old scenery of Cuba. And that's what this brand brings. It's what Cuba was. So that's, and it's such a beautiful artwork that, you know, it's wonderful. And that gives you a representation of what the brand brings you. You know, and like I said, Aladdin brings you to that era. And Aladino, I think, is the Cuban era cigar.
One interesting, I guess, strategy you've had rolling out this cigar, and I've seen you kind of use this as a strategy. I remember when I was down in Honduras, there was the sampler tray.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that is so wonderful. you know,
yeah,
my dad is so creative.
Right.
That is his creation. That is something that just blew me off the top. This is a tray that brings the seven original Cuban sizes.
Right.
So there's the Toro's not there, the Gordo's not there.
Right.
So you know, you start with the Corona, and I think it's Corona,
Rothschild, Churchill, yeah,
Lancero, Robusto,
Cazadores,
and Cazadores.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we, and it's very easy for any shop, and actually is extremely shelf friendly because it's actually 16 inches wide, which is about two boxes wide,
right,
and 13 inches deep. So, you know, in a small footprint, you bring 10 cigars of each, and it's 13 inches deep, and for $290 buy-in, it's a great way to
right.
get our foot in the door. And then the retailer, what happens with the retailer, he'll know what actually SKU moves best for him, and then he could just reorder. Or if all move well, he could reorder all seven, but then he's got to order the Toro and you know, other sizes like the Petit Corona that we have also available.
Right. Yeah. No, that I remember, like I said, I first saw it in Honduras, and then I started a couple of the shops started telling me about it. And that's exactly what you were doing.
Yeah. We probably put in a lot. We sold a lot of those. And then it's probably our gateway to into a cigar shop. And that's probably a very, very, very creative idea of my dad, Julio.
That's great. That's great. Talking with Justo Arroyo live from Tailored Smoke here at the Epicenter. And we're talking all things JRE tobacco. Another brand that you've had that's a popular brand is Tatascan. Talk a little about that brand.
Well, Tatascan, you know, is one of those brands that we have a more accessible, more valued cigar that, you know, a lot of people like to smoke. It's a little milder cigar. It comes in Habano wrapper and also in Connecticut. And it's doing fantastic. I mean, one of the things we're trying to do in our portfolio is keep our portfolios, you know, with the exception of Aladino, which has got a lot of Vitolas, Tatascan has got only five: Corona, Robusto, Toro, Grand Churchill, and Gordo. That's it. And the less SKUs we have, and we create that consumption, we want to keep our portfolio small, but we want to keep our cigars consistent. So every time you go and get one of our cigars, you know what you're getting, and you always get the same taste profile.
And that was designed to be more of a gateway cigar for people, right?
Absolutely. It's a cigar that, you know, a lot of people today, you know, before, you know, there was a trend in you know, when the boom was that people wanted stronger cigars. Now as you mature, you know, you want probably a more lighter cigar or creamier cigar. And these are the cigars that are, you know, will fit that palate.
Yep. So that comes out of Connecticut and Habano.
Yes, sir.
You guys go to Habano, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you sourced the Connecticut shade.
Yeah, we sourced the Connecticut shade. We got, and we also now got a phenomenal, beautiful crop in Connecticut ourselves. You know, you'll be seeing hopefully true puros from Honduras in our production. We're very proud to say that.
Very interesting. And then you have a third offering in that line. It's a value priced. It's called
the Tatascan bundle. I mean, it's 100% tobacco, and it's one of those. It's got Robusto, Toro, Churchill, and Gordo. And this line is our bundle cigar line, which is actually, we did a little change. You know, we talked to a lot of our stores that had carried it before. We changed the man from a yellow, light, little kind of flashy yellow with a hat, and we turned that into just a black man with the Tatascan name and black. And it's right now is doing extremely well.
Yeah, it really, I saw it at the show.
Well, you can see it today. It's doing extremely well.
Yeah,
here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A great value cigar. Third line, Rancho Luna.
Rancho Luna is one of the middle of the road cigars,
right,
that you know is MSRPs range 7, 750 and 9. Three sizes only: Robusto, Toro, Gordo. That's the most popular sizes in the industry. It comes in also in Habano. All three lines have a component of Corojo in it, but it's basically an Habano filler. It's got a Corojo binder. And it either has the San Andres Maduro wrapper, or it's got the Habano wrapper on it.
You guys work with San Andres a lot. Have you guys ever tried with the Corojo making the Maduro?
With the Corojo making the Maduro? Well, with the Corojo, we have the San Andres wrapper now.
Right. But have you tried to, you know, put the Corojo wrapper through a Maduro process?
You know, that's something that I'm gonna push my dad to try to do something, because right. I think it's gonna be interesting. I think we got to push the envelope. I think that's something cool.
Yeah, that's good. Aaron, as far as the three brands, any questions you have? Because then we get into the IPCBR releases.
If we're gonna talk about the Maduro version of the Aladino and the
weekend. Yeah, go ahead. You go ahead.
Yeah, so now you're releasing the Maduro version of the Aladino. What's the difference between that and the original release?
Well, one of the things that we try to do is get a box press cigar prior to the pre-release that we did a test. We only did maybe 100 boxes, mm-hmm. and we shipped it out to different stores just to test them out in the market, and the feedback was phenomenal. But the other things that we wanted to do is bring something out that very, I think the box press gives us a lot of elegance and basically also, believe it or not, for some reason or other, people say it changes the flavor. But anyways, we came out with the Elegante, which is our Lancero, our Cazador, Robusto and Toro, and the last three are box pressed. And they have really taken by with a pleasant surprise of really taken off in the stores that we have put it in. They have done phenomenally well. They're extremely well priced and we're extremely happy with the performance. It's got the filler and binder, which are Oscar Corojo, and then you got the San Andres wrapper, and that combination is just absolutely very, very smooth, but also with flavor. It's just a wonderful, wonderful cigar.
But you have less sizes of that than the classic Aladino Corojo.
Yes, absolutely. Just four sizes. Keep our portfolio simple, and like I said, it's just we want to keep things simple.
So that Rothschild's, though, you have a Rothschild in that size. I know that, right?
I know. I think we have some there. There might be some special releases that we'll go out there once in a while.
I've had it, and I'm bugging them to release it.
So. Yeah.
No, but that's your dad's size, the Rothschild.
My dad's size is the Rothschild. Well, I'm working on something for the Rothschild.
Okay. So when he blends, right, is he – like a lot of – you hear people – they say they start with a Corona and blend. Does he blend to the Rothschild and then go there? Is that – or is it just the size
he
likes?
He really enjoys Rothschild. I guess, the Rothschild was – my dad calls it the mini Churchill.
Yeah.
But it's definitely – it's one of his favorite sizes. It's one of those sizes that he grew up with. It was very popular, back in the 90s. It was one of the dominant sizes in the industry. Now we have moved to the Toro, so that's why he's used to it. Old school.
I've smoked some of those original ones in the round. They were really good, but I do think the box press did something to take it really to another level. I was telling you that beforehand. It softened the blend just a little bit, and I think it really brought out the best of it.
Absolutely, and I don't know the chemistry behind it, but it really does. It just tastes fabulous.
Yeah. Now, this was a pretty busy IPCPR for you this year. You had we talked about the new packaging around Tadas Canelo and obviously Aladino Maduro. But there was one other thing you brought to the show this year.
Well, we actually brought the Corojo Reserva, the Aladino Corojo Reserva. This is something that worked with a good friend of mine that also helps me rep, which is Tom Polar. He says, "Look, we worked on the blend in February this year." And we actually said, hey, we have in our bag of repertoire of blends that we have done, we have great tobacco. One of the great tobaccos that we have aged for many, many years is our Corona. That's kind of what you reserve on the top leaf. Actually, if you do the 14 leaves, the two top leaves is 14% of the plant.
Right.
So we have plenty of inventory. But one of the things we're doing, this is a limited cigar with the Corona leaf, true puro, with the Corona is the Ligero. So, but it's extremely smooth, but at the same time, it's very bold. And we released this with great success, and we're only doing 400 boxes a month. So everything that we did at the trade show was sold out, and now everybody that we shipped is already reordering. So now, we're limiting the amount of the boxes that go into the cigar stores because we want to keep this as something that is special and for people to try it. The MSRP is $12. So it's something that is extremely accessible, but you're going to, it's something that, it's going to be limited. It's also a cigar that is by allocation.
Right.
You know, you gotta carry at least 9 facings of our brand.
Okay.
So it's something that it works. But you know, the display and 2 Maduros will get you there.
There you go. Now available on one side, it's a Robusto, right?
Absolutely. It's just a Robusto, and we just want to keep it for like that for now. I think it's we want to keep it simple.
Okay. What was the logic in putting the tissue sleeve around the bottom?
Well, it's easier. Well, this is the only cigar in our whole line. Even it's got a barcode. The reason you have it with cellophane in the box, it comes without cellophane.
No, this is a sample. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a sample that is in my backpack. So the samples that I carry with me will have the cellophane because I don't want to damage it. But the tissue not only it gives it a better presentation, but when a lot of people go to the store and pick it up, you know, it will protect the cigar more. From you know, from people just grabbing it or something like that. So I think, and also to put it on the barcode. So it's got two functions: not only as a protection, but also to put the barcode on it.
We interviewed your brother, and I'm not trying to do the brother comparison, but your brother actually said he hates cellophane, and that's why he puts a lot of tissue on it on paper.
Well, you have to respect that because he likes also for the cigars to blend,
marry
in there, and also be more uniform. And, you know, we do that also in our rooms. Once we produce the cigars, we have the cigars there aging easily, you know, 3 to 6 months. So we're producing ahead of time.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So this is something that's hitting the stores right now. And, again, it's 100% authentic crow. It's using some of the different priming. It's a stronger cigar in your portfolio.
It is, well, you know, everything that we have done is medium, so we actually needed something with a little bit more fullness.
Yeah.
And this is something that, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised that it's been taken up with, you know, with great acceptance. So we're very happy.
That's good. You've been hitting the road quite a bit right now. Road warrior, so to speak.
Well, you know, if you need to, you know, building a brand takes a lot of work. And there's a lot of guys out there that, you know, are repping me, which are doing a great job. And they're, you know, they're setting us up to introduce the brand. And, you know, it requires a lot of work. And I'm willing to put the work to people to meet the brand and also to know that we're there for the brick and mortar stores.
Yep. No, that's great. Aaron, anything you want to ask Ed at this point?
No, I'm just looking forward to trying the cigar very much. So you sent me one, some, and I wanted to smoke my full attention to it. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's it. When we smoke on the show sometimes, we tend sometimes to we enjoy them, but we can't focus on them. So typically, I have some more, Aaron. I have some more I can send too. So I have some, yeah. So, but yeah, we'll work that out. But yeah, no, it's the band kind of really has a secondary band. It's a nice band.
Yeah, and you know my dad likes yellow.
Yeah, no, I know that. Yeah. I was going to get at that.
So you can see that. You know, he's got a yellow car. His office was yellow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, everything that we do is yellow. So, you know, yellow is actually looks fantastic. And it's an old retro cigar. It's very Cubanistic. You know, that's how we – these are actually the original bands that were going to come out on the Aladino.
Yep.
And I told him, hey, let's vamp it up a little bit. So now we have this band, which is basically the, you know – it's silver lining, a little bit more up to date.
Metallic, a little metallic look to it.
Yeah, but still, it's still retro, you know? So, and I think since this is old school, that's what we wanted to do, old school.
Yep, no, exactly. Now, 2 years since you, a little over 2 years since you was JRE Tobacco, what has Justo Roa learned about this business that he didn't know all those years growing up on here?
You know, you have to admire the guys that have been out there as road warriors. I mean, you know, the Rocky Patels, my brother, you know, there's a lot of work that requires for people to actually get a brand for people to try it. You know, I always say there's great manufacturers out there. There's great tobacco out there. And, you know, I need to distinguish myself by, you know, service, you know, providing good quality. And also something that is important, you know, meeting and getting to know our business partners, which are the brick and mortar stores.
Yep, absolutely. Aaron, can you take over one more minute again?
Yeah. So kind of going along with that, what's been your kind of strategy for hitting the road? Are you setting up events at shops and things like that? Or are you just kind of visiting shops to be able to kind of extend the brand out?
Well, you know, the trade show this year was extremely good for us. I mean, I think we were full house. almost every single day. Even to the last day, we were, you know, we were opening new accounts and shops. So it was fantastic. So a lot of the things that we have done with my local reps is basically once the cigars were out, I started hitting the road to, because a lot of them are new accounts. So having new accounts, I wanted to do cut and lights. So we're doing a lot of cut and lights in all the stores that brought in the product so people can try it and also talk about the product. And you know, we need to do this. I mean, I always tell the cigar shop owners, you know, I need your help and for people to try the cigar. Once this people try the cigar will work for you once they're smoking it. So it's important for people to try the cigar.
Okay, we're back. I've been paranoid about the connection.
We're off the air?
No, we're on the air. They're not off the hook yet. So the other thing that I've found interesting about what I've seen with your operation is it still very much is a family affair. I see your whole family involved in the Jerry operation, but what's different is it's all female.
Well, I'm dominated in the house by females. I got a wife and three daughters. And actually, it was one of the things that I have enjoyed the most. You know, with such a busy life, one of the things that, you know, people really need to do is enjoy the families.
Right.
And the trade show has been, for me, fantastic because I'm able to have them all together. And actually, I think my daughter was maybe turned 18. My youngest one, Ariana, turned 18 for the trade show. So she was actually legal maybe by a day or 2 days to be there.
Right.
So, you know, we were able to be there, and Bibi, you know, the oldest one is the one that runs the social media, and Andrea, which is still she's a senior today in college, also helps and works. I mean, they all did a fantastic job. I'm very proud of them, but you know, just that bonding time, and I see them working is great because you know they get to meet such wonderful people at the trade show, and you know, in the teaching them ethics to work and also how to help people in service is very important.
Yep. And like I said, I've seen them work at the trade show. I've been in the office. I've seen your wife working in the office too. So it's
we've been working with my wife for even before we got about 25, 26 years. So it's been a wonderful team.
Yeah. See, it's my wife, like I said, she does some stuff for the Cigar Coop and she's ready to like kill me. Like,
believe me, that happens a lot.
Right,
believe
right.
me. Usually, you know, it's better, it's less is more.
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. No, it's all good. It's all good. So why don't we get into what we are smoking tonight? Aaron, unless you have anything else?
No, go ahead.
Okay. And of course, what we are smoking every week is brought to you by Tobacco Haven, located in Brookline, New Hampshire. Tobacco Haven is a home to New England's largest open box walk-in humidor with brands such as Rocky Patel, Quesada, Tatuaje, and L'Atelier. Tobacco Haven has your cigar needs covered. It is also the exclusive home to Tobacco Haven's 30th anniversary cigar by Casa Fernandez, available in Corojo and Maduro. You can visit them on the web at www.tobaccohavennh.com, and primetime listeners can use the code COOP10, that's COOP10, and save 10% on your order. So, Aaron, you're smoking, I think we're all smoking the Aladino Robusto tonight. What are your thoughts on that?
Actually, I'm smoking the Aladino Maduro Cazador.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
And this is a very nice cigar. It's very full on flavor, but in regards to strength, it's, I would say, slightly below medium. So it's not going to beat you over the head with strength, but you're getting a ton of flavor out of it. Very woody, very creamy. There's like a subtle spice to it. Construction's fantastic. Retrohaling is very important with this cigar as well. You get a lot of additional flavor by retrohaling it. It's really nice. This is my first time smoking the Maduro, and it's an enjoyable experience.
Well, cheers to you.
Thank you.
That's.
I went a little more old school. I went with the natural, which I lit up a few minutes before the show. Aladino is a blend. It's very diverse, and you can smoke it in anything from like the Petit Corona,
yes,
the Palmas, all the way up to a Patton, which is a 9x48.
Yeah, yes.
And they'll all bring a very different taste. The Robusto is kind of right in the middle there. It's got the creaminess. It's got it has a subtle spice. It's got a nice sweetness to it that you get off the Corojo. I don't get any, like, when you hear the term Cuban-esque sometimes, I think it's thrown out there, but this is very clean on my palate.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
It's, like I said, I don't get an aftertaste. I'm not big into that Cuban twang. I'm just not big into that, and this doesn't really scream it at, which is good.
Well, you know what happens a lot when they say people, you know, when people confuse a lot of times, you know, flavor and strength with bitterness with, you know, younger tobaccos. If tobaccos are not rolled that much, you know, the leaves, then you get a little bit of bitterness. And, oh, that's a strong tobacco. But no, it's a little bit of ammonia that it makes you a kick. It kicks up the flavor, and you know, and sometimes they do that. And so, but you know, I tend to agree with you. You know, everybody's got their own personal perception, and the description. But you know, as like I said, our idea to say is the most Cubanesque, in my personal opinion, is because of the Corojo, and that's what we use. You know,
right?
Yeah.
Which is your go-to size in the Aladino?
You know, I tend to do a lot of the Lanceros. I like Lanceros.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that. But, you know, Robustos, since I'm always out on the road, and the only samples I get from my wife are the Robustos, so I smoke a lot of Robustos, too.
Right. You mentioned the Lancero is one of your better sizes. I mean, you hear from the retailers they don't sell. People don't want them. Now, it's a great price point, but I've seen Lanceros at a great price point not sell.
Well, the stores that I'm in are basically, I would say, is part of their best Lancero set of sales. And you know, the numbers that we're seeing are very, very satisfying.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people don't smoke Lanceros because you get a Lancero between, you know, $10, $12, $13. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, that those Lanceros will, you know, will have a little tighter draw. And, you know, so they'll stay away from it. But, you know, we're trying, one of the ideas for me is to push those smaller sizes. One of the attractive of smoking that Lancero is you get so much flavor from it, and also the price point will also drive you to try it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you kept, you know, you mentioned earlier, the Maduro Lancero is still rounded, so that
correct. Yeah. 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 That would be a hard one to box press.
Yeah. I was just saying, yeah. That would be a very thin cigar.
Yeah.
Nope. So, no, definitely. The other thing I'll just say, what I can honestly say, not just because you hear the Aladino has been very consistent with me. I've been smoking them now for 2.5 years, and they smoke exactly as they have 2.5 years ago.
And that's our idea. You know, when you do something, we want, you know, be consistent. Every time you go to, you know, you're going to get what you get. You get what you get.
You know, let me ask you another question here. You know, there's a lot of limited editions out there, right? And, you know, these one and dones, but you haven't opted to kind of go that route. You've been opting to go the brand building route instead.
Correct. I mean, remember, my background is the beverage business.
Right.
And, you know, in the beverage business, you build your power, your power brand. And, you know, you have perfect examples of that. And, you know, and that's my mindset. You know, I just want to build something that is consistently good and people will try it and will always go for it. You know, if I need to always innovate with something to be able to grow, it's going to be hard because then you confuse the client. There's limited space in the shelves. And I just want something that everybody that you want, if you smoke an Aladino, you know, every time you pick up an Aladino, you're going to get that smoothness. You're going to get that flavor. And that is something that coming from the beverage industry has taught you. You need to brand build and always have consistency and quality.
There you go. I kind of say it. You know, those companies that every year can do those consistent brands, you know, the Fuentes, the Olivas, the Padrones.
That's the true to success.
Yeah.
I mean, if you need to innovate every single year to have to something new, you know, you still got to get that product out of the shelf. So you can move the new SKU there.
Yep.
And you know, there's very limited space in those humidors.
Yep. All right. So what we'll do is we're gonna keep you for one more short segment, and then you're free. All right. So
thank you.
The torture is almost over. All right.
So you mean to stay here? Or
yeah. Stay here. Okay. Stay here. We'll do a quick sponsor break, and then we'll do the last segment here, okay, which will be a fun one, or last segment with you. But you can stay as long as you want, by the way.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. We want to thank Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes or Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And by Villiger Cigars. Since 1888, Villiger Cigars have been experts in everything tobacco and offering a wide range of premium cigars for all connoisseurs. Villiger's latest release of a 40-ink line is a project that has been 10 years in the making. It's a true collaboration between Villiger chairman Heinrich Villiger and master blender Jose Martias Maragoto. The cigar delivers a full-flavored experience thanks to the extensive aging of the tobacco. It was Cigar Aficionado's number 10 cigar of the year for 2017. Be sure to ask your retailer for the 40-ink line, and you can visit Villiger's entire line of premium cigars at www.villigercigars.com. and by Island Lifestyle Importers. Who is Tommy Bahama? He is a charismatic gentleman and generous host, effortlessly charming, confident, and accomplished, always fun to be around. With a classic sense of style, he inspires us. An active man who loves to travel and seek adventure, he is worldly, spontaneous, and spirited. He makes everything look too easy, while his understated style is relaxed and always appropriate for the occasion. That's why he smokes the highly rated Island Lifestyle cigars. He is a man that realizes that once in a lifetime is not enough. Find these highly rated cigars and Tommy Bahama cigar accessories at fine tobacconists nationwide or visit www.islandlifestyleimporters.com. Live the island lifestyle. And by Cornelius and Anthony, if you're going to be wanted for something great. That's what Cornelius Bailey set out to do 5 generations ago, and that's what Stephen Bailey is doing with Cornelius and Anthony cigars. Using the finest tobaccos, Cornelius and Anthony brings to you the Daddy Mac, Venganza, Meridian, Cornelius, and the recently released Ariel and Senior E-Sugars. You can find them at your local tobacconist. Before we kind of get into the Debonair Ideal segment on horses, beforehand, we had a nice dinner beforehand.
Oh, beautiful.
I saw that.
This is, you know, the hosting here and the environment, and, you know, you have Louis here, and it's just been fantastic. You can't get better place to be. This is wonderful. You know, it's just so cozy.
Yeah, no, so actually, Fleming Steakhouse is like right across in the epicenter here, and they have a deal where you can actually order the food here, and they bring it to you. Like, they bring the whole service here. So we get these 4 steaks, and they look like 4 Flintstone cuts. I think we would
absolutely. Well, yours was the Flintstone. You had a big old bone on it, so you know. But you ate it pretty good.
Man. Oh, I was starving. I hadn't eaten all
you
that.
You ate like Fred.
I ate like Fred, man. I look like Fred too. But yeah. So, and those Brussels sprouts. Like, so Preston, who's the owner here, orders Brussels sprouts. I'm like, all right, you know.
Good. You know, we had a low carb.
Yeah, but they were good. Whatever.
Fantastic.
Whatever was in those Brussels, it was like a balsamic vinegar.
Yeah,
in
it was beautiful. It was delicious.
Yeah. So definitely check out Tailored Smoke here. They just became Drew Diplomat retailer today. I see Will, the Drew Estate rep, walking around. I think Klaus Peter Kellner is actually here too. I saw him, I think, wandering around outside. So it's definitely happening here. And oh, here's the funny thing, Aaron. I got the Cattle Baron steak delivery from my friend Brian Moussard today.
Nice.
Ordering the meat from him, and my wife's like, well, I said, well, I can't smoke Cattle Baron here. So, I mean, right. So it worked out.
Yep.
All right. So speaking of farms and ranches, we're going to get into our Debonair Ideal segment, sponsored by Debonair House, makers of Debonair Ultra Premium Cigars and Indian Motorcycle Ultra Premium Cigars. So in this segment, we take a little break from the cigar talk. And we already kind of started to do that. And we talk about things in everyday life. So one thing that I learned when I went down to the Aurora Tobacco Farm is you guys are into horses down there.
Well, my dad is a lover of horses. He always loved horses.
Right.
I mean, there was a point, you know, we had one of the other farms, you know, in one past history, you know, my dad, he used to grow up to 1,200 acres of tobacco.
Right.
And in one of the things we had a lot of land. So one of the things he had a lot of horses. And he loved horses. He always does love horses. And horses, you know, it's part of the experience when you go and visit us and you know, visit the farm and that. And for us just to take you to do something different. You know, a lot of people that come and visit us come from big cities and they've never been in a horse. I didn't even know that was your first time riding horses.
No.
So you know, it's great. And, you know, the horses that, you know, we have at the farm that are disposal for our visitors, that they come and visit us, which we'll have trips at the end of February for the last 2 weeks. Either come in on a Sunday and even a Wednesday, or come in on a Wednesday and even a Saturday. We're going to have that for retailers this coming 2019, and you'll be able to experience that whole operation by not only seeing that, you know, a process chronologically to the end of, you know, from the seed all the way to the end of the cigar manufacturing, including box manufacturing, but you'll be able to get to ride, you know, see, you know, the way a farm operates, and also, you know, get to really relax and enjoy riding horses.
You know, it was no secret, and I don't want to make this too much about me, but I guess it is, right?
No.
So I was terrified, okay? I got the itinerary, and I see horseback riding, and I'm terrified on this, right? And I didn't want to tell him I'm terrified. And we're going through a great trip, and I'm like, we're never going to get to the horseback riding because we're just – well, the horseback riding piece came up, and I was terrified. I mean, he can attest to that before I got on that horse. There was something – after being on that horse, now it was a smaller horse, Brandon,
horse. Well, you have to say the size. It's a horse.
Yeah, just say it's a horse.
It wasn't a pony, so don't worry about it.
I didn't go on the big one, though, if you notice, right?
Yeah.
But I understand how people develop this bond with these horses from, and I don't know if it was me just because the horse made me feel so at ease, and it didn't like do anything to scare me more. But I kind of like, I was like, this horse was like my buddy by the time I got off of it.
Well, you know what happens? When you're riding horses, you know, if you just ride a horse by yourself, you have somebody that is company. And yeah. Sometimes you go there and you talk to them, hey, you know, move, you know, slow down. So, you know, but even now, you build that bond with a horse when you're riding horses.
Right.
And just being out there in nature and just, you know, walking in such a magnificent animals, it's just great. And they're so noble.
Right.
You know, they always say, you know, I would say the dog and the horse have always been one of my best friends.
Yeah.
I mean, they're wonderful. And the horses are just so noble. And they're so, you know, they're so majestic, you know. And it's something that I really enjoy since I was a little kid riding horses.
How many horses does he have on the farm?
I'm telling my dad he needs to cut down on the amount of horses, but I would say we're probably close to about 20 or 30 horses.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but, you know, he wants to have more and more. I said, Dad, you know, we got to cut down on the horses, but he loves horses.
And what are they just, is your dad?
They're working horses. You know, they use them, you know, to, there's a lot of fence repairing because there's, you know, there are a lot of fences. So the guys will ride horse, and there were also guys that, you know, will check. They got timing clocks so they could see that all the bars and everything. So they're used for security, not security, but you know, to just check the farm around at night and stuff like that. So they're working horses. So not only do they work for pleasure when people go there, but they also use them to work.
I will say it is a good way to get around the farm too.
Oh,
I mean, there's areas where the vehicle can't get down there.
Yeah, correct. And there was a one time that, you know, my dad brought Kentucky mules to do the work. Way back in, you know, in his early career. So,
right.
You know, he's always been a fanatic of using animal traction and working with animals.
That's good. Now,
cheaper than gas. You're feeding grass.
Yeah. Now, are you into like horse racing or Arabians or anything like that?
No. Well, you know, I'm always into pleasure riding. You know, I had a Peruvian horse and also had a Spanish horse when I had the farm and we had the cattle farm with the dairy. So I always rode horses and, you know, help, you know, herd the cattle and stuff like that. So I used to do that a lot. So, you know, it's been part of something that I've always been doing.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I grew up in New York City and horses are big in New York City because the horse racing is such a big thing in New York City for different reasons. But I always liked going out to Belmont, even though I didn't ride the horses. I did like always going to see the horses, you know, and you can go to the stables and see that too.
No, you'll be able to get, you know, if you come back again, you have a horse. And Aaron's got to come down and ride some horses, too.
Yep.
He's probably a cowboy, too.
Aaron, have you ever been on a horse?
I have, multiple times. Growing in California, you know, people like to think it's very urban and lots of houses and stuff like that. But in where I live, there's still a lot of ranches and things like that, and a lot of riding trails and stuff. So it's you know, and growing up, you know, I had friends that had, you know, had horses and things like that. So I got a chance to ride like a lot all the time, but I had opportunities like, you know, maybe a couple times a year that I could get up on a horse and
just, yeah. You know, no, what was really did your daughter ride horses?
No, she's only three, so she
okay,
hasn't
gotten
on a horse yet.
Yeah. We'll get her there. You can start riding ponies. You can.
Yep. Because, the only problem is once she rides one, she's gonna want one.
Oh, well, then you know, like you said, well, you can't bring him to the house.
That's right.
You need a field to keep him stable.
Yeah, Aaron's partner, Seth, who writes on Developing Palettes with him, his daughter, I think, is like five, and she's really into horses.
Well, my daughters, when they were little, they were, you know, the pink pony, a you know, little pony, whatever, they were all about the little pony.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, they were definitely good. Is, I mean, horses are a big part, obviously, in Honduras, too. I mean, people use them.
Look, it is. Not only is it they work with them, but they're also mobility. A lot of the little towns and stuff like that, and there's a lot of local fairs in the small towns, and you know, horses are part of the main attraction. They'll do stuff with horses. You know, they get rodeos and stuff like that. So it's a culture of horses, and everything that you do out in the farm and in the country horses are very part of big part of the life.
How hands on were you like the raising of the horses? You know,
I used to, you know, get up early in the mornings. I had to saddle my own horse. I mean, the first thing they taught me how to do is saddle my own horse.
Right.
So, you know, and I consider myself, you know, a fairly okay rider. So, you know, I can.
You were miles ahead of me. I was getting.
The horse that I had, you know, was one of the studs. And it's pretty. I don't know how to say it. Brilloso. I don't know how you say it in English, but it's you know very very tentative. You know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Little
spirit, high spirited.
Yeah, it freaked me out a bit.
Yeah.
I was like,
that's why I stayed away from you too. So, yeah. But you had a couple guys riding next to you, so you were pretty safe.
No, I know the guy. I asked the guy, one of your hands. I said, "Hey, just hold him for me, right? While I ride, right? Don't let go." And the next thing I know, I turn to my right, and he's like way behind me. Like he just let me go.
You were an autopilot. They got autopilots. Yeah. You know, they got your Garmin GPS. So you were okay.
I was like, wow, this is great. It was. He just knew I was scared, but then he saw me getting comfortable. And rather than tell me he was going to let go, he just let go.
No, yeah. You see, okay.
Yeah.
We're sitting here and, you know, looking forward to it doing again.
Yeah. And there's a picture out. I didn't take the picture of me. But oh, he's got it.
I think now I got to put on my glasses. I was trying to look cool without glasses.
No, you got to.
Let me see. I don't know,
Aaron. I think I'm a pro now.
Yeah. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you'll be.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah, like I said, it's kind of like no one believed me that I was on the horse. And that's why, like, people said, why did you put the picture up on Facebook? Because no one believed me.
Right.
Like my kids didn't believe me. My wife did believe me. But then I showed her the picture, and it was like, okay, then she was confirmed with that. And oh, boy.
Pictures. Well, when you're looking for something, you can't find it. Believe me.
He's got, like, that's scary if it's on there.
There you go, Mr. Will Cooper.
Here it is, guys.
That's right.
Look at me. I'm the champ.
Yep.
I was the champ.
Cooper Balboa.
Yeah. It was awesome. All right. So who's still? I know you had a busy schedule, and I didn't want to keep you super late. Thanks for making some time tonight.
Well, to you and Aaron, thank you, Aaron, for, you know, you guys hosting me. It's really a privilege, and I really, you know, really appreciate this. Thank you so much, and, you know, have a great night, both of you.
Great. Thank you. That's Husto Arroyo of JRE Tobacco, our special guest here on Primetime tonight. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you very much. God bless everybody. So anyway, we're going to do one. Aaron and I are going to do one more segment, and we'll get into a sponsor break right now with that. And this segment is sponsored by Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust. With Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, master blender Steve Saka set out to create Puro Son Compromiso. That's cigars without compromise. This represents a closely held expression of Saka's closely held values and a test in three simple words, everything Saka wants to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion of Saka. They are a way of life. As for the brands of Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sobra Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagog, Muestra de Saka, and the recently released Todos los Dias at your local tobacconist. And by M. Bombay Cigars. M. Bombay Cigars represent the most admired cigar culture of Cuba. They respect the best of the best quality tobacco to use in the aging process. M. Bombay Cigars are then rolled in Costa Rica by some of the world's most experienced cigar rollers, giving it a unique smoking experience. The band portrays our detailed and artistic nature of our small industry. Try the M. Bombay and the new Gaia line. M. Bombay Cigars, where the cigar is a way of life. And by Caldwell Cigar Company. Caldwell Cigar Company lost in 2014 with a very simple mantra. Create, innovate, ambition. Since day one, they have done things differently. They have challenged the industry norms to produce it time and time again to deliver on that promise. Look for Caldwell products or any number of their collaborations at your local retailer today. And we, of course, want to thank our newest sponsor, Joya de Nicaragua, celebrating 50 years in the cigar business this year. So we went a little faster tonight because I knew Husto had a long day, and he has to be up very early tomorrow too. So I wanted to thank him very much as well, Aaron.
Yep.
So, and I've been paranoid about this, but the stream appears fine, by the way. I've been just extra paranoid tonight. So doing a remote here. So, you know, last week we talked about this whole thing about high scoring And I don't think it did any good, right?
Right.
Because there were more high scores that came out this week. Yeah. But as we were kind of going through the high scores, I started kind of thinking, well, you know, we talked about high scores, but we haven't really tackled the subject of low scoring.
Right.
And I started thinking about this quite a bit, you know, in terms of low scoring. And I think there's a whole other side of the story to tell on that. Not just that there aren't a lot of low scores. I think there are low scores out there. But I thought we'd kind of take a closer look at that tonight.
Sure.
All right. So here's the first question I'll ask. What, in your opinion, makes a cigar score? What in your opinion, should a cigar? Why should a cigar score lower? What is the reason why a cigar should get, like, panned in a score?
Cigars could score low if the flavor isn't very good. If there are construction issues that detract from the enjoyment of the cigar. If the tobacco is maybe not aged correctly, just have off flavors due to the improper fermentation or whatever the case may be. So those would be things that would definitely make a cigar score lower for me.
Okay, so a couple of I'll ask a couple of scenarios around that. First, let's say the cigar tastes great, burns like crap, and draws like crap. But
right.
Let's just say burns like crap, because if it draws like crap, you're not going to get anything out of it, okay?
Yeah.
But so let's just say it's burning, bad combustion, but somehow you're getting the flavors, but just you're touching the thing up and you're fighting the burn. Should that cigar get a low score?
I think if the flavor is still very good, it would still score well. I mean, it really is up to how you perceive the enjoyment of the cigar. If you don't mind the work to keep it going, I think it would still do well. But if you start getting frustrated with the cigar because of the burn, then it would be something that causes it to score lower.
So if you had but here's my other question. If the cigar is burning bad, isn't it ultimately ripple affecting back into the flavor?
Sometimes it would, sometimes it wouldn't. I mean, if the burn is just off, but it can still maintain itself and you're not having to babysit it, you know, to me, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, I'm not somebody that really ties the burn into the scoring of the cigar unless it is affecting the flavor. Because for me, the flavor is the most important portion of the scoring of the cigar.
So let's go the opposite way now. Let's say construction's great. You get the most pristine burn line. The draw is impeccable, but the flavor stinks.
Let's get a low score. Flavor is most important, always.
Okay. Isn't flavor can you make the argument that flavor is subjective, though?
Yeah, it's subjective, but when I'm doing a rating, I'm rating it based on my enjoyment level of it. I'm not trying to figure out what the market wants. And I think if people do that, they're shortchanging everybody, because they're looking kind of for your opinion. They're not necessarily saying, you know, it's not something like if you're reviewing like an oven and it either functions or it doesn't function. It's really based on the flavor that you're picking out and kind of how you can say whether it's good or not. People want your opinion. They don't want a generalized, you know, I don't care for this flavor, but I know other people that do, so I'm going to give it a higher score.
If a cigar is one-dimensional in flavor, should that be penalized against the cigar?
I don't think so. If you enjoy the flavor, then it should score well. Okay. If there's not a lot of transitions and it's the same kind of flavor profile the entire way, if you like it, then it should still score well.
Okay. I think that's all fair. I think that's all fair comments. I tend to find sometimes I do get a little bit of that ripple effect where if there is one of those construction attributes that are affecting when I'm scoring the cigar, it's usually going to lead to me not enjoying that cigar from an overall standpoint, and I usually end up punting.
Right.
That's what I've usually seen happen with me, is I've ended up, there's a punt that I'll make, so it has this ripple effect as well. Or especially if there's a combustion problem, then I know it's rippling into the flavor right now.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have to relight multiple times and the relights, you know, cause like charred flavors or things like that, it's definitely going to have an effect on the flavor, and then that will represent itself in the score.
Okay. Yeah, so I think most of those points I'm in agreement with. Now, what, in your opinion, is that level, that number, the magic number where the cigar suddenly moves into? Now, I know on a developing palate what it is, right? But in the industry, if we, let's go to 100-point system, right?
Yeah.
What number do you think is that number where if it's it's below that line, I call the Mendoza line. If it's below that line, the cigar is in for, you know, not it's going to be perceived as a bad score.
I'll give you my opinion, then I'll give you what I think the masses.
I know you guys.
My opinion is if it's like 85 and below, you're probably starting to look at that it's not so great.
Right.
But I think in the industry, if you get an 89 or below, people perceive it as not good.
Yeah. I actually think that 89, I actually think it's below 88. So I think it's like a point low. I think if you get the 87, that's like you didn't make it. Right. I think some people can live with the 89.
Yeah, I think that they're okay with it. I mean, obviously we've seen companies that have touted, you know, 87s and 88s and things like that. So, you know, they are okay with it. But yeah, I think that magic 90 number is kind of where it sits.
Yeah, if I look at Cigar Aficionado, I think people can live with an 89 from a Cigar Aficionado, maybe an 88, mm-hmm. but anything lower than that, they're not happy.
Yeah, I think there are sites where they're very much more. They take a lot more points away for construction issues if they have to relight or touch up and things like that, and that's what brings it down below the 90 mark. So they could, you know, if you read the review, they still like the flavors and things like that, but said, "Oh, I had to relight or you know I had to touch up a few times." That takes it down below that kind of that 90 mark, and that's you know kind of where I think people get confused as to whether or not they think it's a good cigar or not.
Yeah, I could tell you that. What's the percentage? I mean, are you able to, if you want to, you don't want to say it's fine. What's the percentage that you weigh construction into your overall score?
I want to say it's something like 15%.
Okay. It's like 18% on mine. So it's pretty.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, flavor is the most important always. Construction, we actually changed after the first year of reviews, we actually reduced the amount that construction weighed in because we saw that cigars that had really good construction. That was actually inflating the scores a little bit. So we wanted to take that a little bit out because we knew that bad construction would show itself in the flavors. So that would be where you would see the bulk of the points coming down because the flavor was affected.
Yeah. No, I could see that. I did that very early on. I had the same problem. I was scoring appearance early on too.
Yeah, exactly.
I made that mistake. So all my scores will come in 93 and 94 very early on.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a mistake a lot of people make is they want to score the appearance when, for a status smoker, I can see where that would be important. But for the people that are wanting to enjoy the flavors, it shouldn't really matter if there's a lot of veins in the wrapper or things like that, or if they don't like the way the band looks. I mean, that's in the end, that's not important to the way that the cigar smokes.
Yeah, because in the end, what if the cigar is unbanded, right? So does that cigar get penalized because it doesn't have a band?
Right.
Or the
aroma from the cigar before you light it.
Right. And I've had some cigars with very ugly wrappers, and they've been great cigars.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I found that most of my scoring with the appearance very easily was inflating every one of my scores. I took them out.
Yep.
So if you look at the early days of Cigar Coupe, there's a lot of 94s there, you know. Today, 94 is a rare score, I mean, that I have. So,
right.
But I took that one out as well. The you know, I've heard some people, they get, you know, the ash shouldn't really matter. That I talk about the ash in my review,
as do we, yeah,
but I don't score it yet. It's like the pre-light. I talk about the pre-light, but I don't score it.
Yeah, I mean, if the ash falls in like half inch increments, when I don't deduct points for that, it doesn't matter how long the ash holds on to the cigar, you know, unless the ash is dropping off and for some reason it's heating up the cigar. But again, that's gonna, if the cigar is heating up, you're probably gonna see an influence on the flavor from that.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely, you know, if I get a cone ash though, sometimes that is an indication it's a combustion problem.
Right, but it, so, you know, if the flavor is still good though. Does it really matter in the end?
Yeah. No, it's that's the bottom line.
Yep.
I agree with you on that. That's what you count there. So I think we hit this question last week, right? We talked a little more. I mean, I think we know the answer to this question, but there aren't a lot of today. I think we're in this boat. A lot of reviewers. I'm going to say you guys are not in that boat at Developing Palate, but there are just not a lot of cigars scored low.
Right.
And I think we've talked about all the reasons why on that.
Yeah. I will add to that though. I mean, we talked about last week about all the factors of why people might want to score them higher, but I think I have another point on why they maybe more don't score lower. I think with, you know, as time goes on and manufacturing gets better and the growing of tobacco and that management of the tobacco gets better, the cigars get better over time. So if people are kind of basing, you know, the flavor of cigars or the construction of cigars from how they were, you know, 5-10 years ago, they're going to score better because they're getting better. But what we tend to do, at least at Development Palate, is we're basing the scores on the other cigars that are on the market at the time. So if all the cigars, you know, if the average cigar now is better, that we still consider that average, because that's what the masses kind of consist of. So we kind of we continually move that bar of what we consider average as things get better.
Yeah, and I think I talked about it where I had one company last week I talked about where they got a 90 and they were unhappy. They were unhappy with that 90. They felt that I shortchanged the cigar.
Right.
They actually felt I shortchanged it, which was like, I didn't shortchange it. It's got a 90 should be a very good score.
And it is. That's the way the scale works. And the only way that it doesn't work that way is if the scale continually increases. And at that point, then, like we talked about, the range has to go beyond that 100-point scale, because you have to be able to find that happy medium of where average resides and, you know, what still is considered good.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, what about this whole – we had this debate on I think it was your year-end show with Mr. Sensei Cigar Dojo. Mm-hmm. And he was arguing this point of it's a premium cigar.
Right.
So it's going to score higher. You kind of took issue with that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not reviewing cigars that don't qualify as premium, then there's really no reason to, you know, maintain a scale where these are set under a certain scoring range. I mean, if you're not reviewing mixed filler cigars, or you're not reviewing bundle cigars, or if you're not reviewing machine-made cigars and things like that, there's really no reason to manipulate the scale to have a range for those things. You should just be using the range for the premium cigars.
I agree. You should be using that same range. You know, I've heard people write this in their reviews when they review flavored cigars, that they review them different.
Yep.
That drives me crazy.
Yeah, so for like 4A flavored cigar, this scores a X.
But it really would have been a Y, but because it's flavored.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, I don't
understand that either. Why is that the case? I never understood that.
Yeah, I just view them as cigars, and it's going to score on the scale where it would score against a non-flavored cigar.
Yeah, you know, it's like now I have a bonus point for complexity. Mm-hmm. So complexity is like a bonus point. You're not going to get the bonus point most likely on a flavored cigar with that.
Right.
So it probably will knock the score. Well, but not every cigar is going to get that bonus point anyway. But it goes back to what you said when I asked the question earlier about if the cigar is kind of steady, should that go against it?
Right.
And I don't think it should.
No, I agree. It shouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's another question I have for you. Is getting a low score a bad thing?
I don't think so, because if especially if a cigar is getting a low score from multiple outlets, you know, the company can take that as feedback for, you know, what may be wrong with the cigar, and they can make changes to it to improve it. So if it's getting a low score because the construction is really bad, you know, maybe they go back into the factory and they find out, why is this happening? Is it the tobacco that we're using? Does it just not burn correctly in this blend? Is it the way they're rolled? Is it the way that they're stored or packaged? So they can use that to improve the cigars so that it can get better scores. But I think if they use it in that fashion, it's going to be something that actually helps.
No, I agree. I agree. Now, I've seen, though, sometimes some companies, particularly the smaller companies, they'll kind of look at this as like, I got this score, and they kind of almost, there's a couple of different ways I've seen this happen. One way is like what Kubara Kanyo recently got that famous 79, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was Klaus Peter Kellner just came by here. So they got, but he kind of used it to promote almost like, hey, we got the 79. Like, show us we're wrong with that.
Right.
Show them they're wrong. You know, it was almost like, show us that our cigars are. And I've seen certain companies do that quite a bit.
Right.
You know, not just them. I've seen other companies do it. Kubara Kanyo went a little overboard with it, I think. Right. But you know, so I've seen that. I can tell you, I had a conversation with I remember Mel from M Bombay, who's a sponsor of the show. The first cigar I scored of his was an 87, right, which was a low score on coupe at the time. And he ended up becoming a sponsor, but it was funny. After he agreed to become a sponsor, then he reminded me of the 87. But he told me something very interesting. He said to me what you said. He said, hey, you know what? We took that 87 and we said, what can we do to do some things better?
Right.
And I think, you know, that was a fair thing to say, too. I don't know if he changed the blend or anything, but you know, you can argue maybe, you know, there's other things you do with pricing, or, you know, things like that. I don't know. But it wasn't, you know, that then he came out the torpedo in that size, and I really liked it. So, in that blend, rather.
Yeah, and there's been instances like I've had conversations with Robert Holt where, you know, June had scored a cigar lower than I did, and his response was, you know, hopefully the next cigar I come out with is going to be something that fits June's palate better. So he didn't take it as a negative for his cigar because obviously I scored it well. But, you know, I think he's looking to be able to provide a cigar in the portfolio that someone is going to enjoy if they didn't enjoy another cigar that he produced.
I'll say this about Robert. He's competitive. He likes the scores.
Yeah.
But he's also will share every score he gets.
Right.
And I think that goes back to maybe not taking the Juan Cancel approach, but again, just showing it all. Mm-hmm. And he's not afraid to hold back some of his comments, maybe if he disagrees with it. But I don't think he's ever... You know, and I'll say this: he was one of the guys who was a little disappointed he got a 90 from me.
Right.
But like I said, you know, I think it was, you know, I can understand. I give him credit; he shares every score he gets.
Yep. Yeah, the other one, you know, seeing the promotions of the cigars, regardless, you know, is still a positive for the brand, I think.
See, and I think that's what it goes back to: is if someone's reviewing my cigar, you know, who had a bunch of, if who had a billboard with a big self-talker at IPC Bar with a bunch of high 80 scores on it.
Who's that?
Was Daniel Marshall.
There you go.
I mean, he had a few 90s burst in there, but I have a picture of it. I'll have to show it to you. He's got, there's mostly 80s, but it was very interesting. It really made the 90 plus cigar rating stand out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's kind of what we think about when we're looking at the scoring range.
Right. I heard so you guys we always talk about how you guys take abuse, right?
Yep.
But I don't know if I heard it, if it was you or Surgeon who said this, or maybe both. But you guys made a good analogy to the developing palates thing as like a satisfaction survey,
right?
And I thought that was a great analogy to put it.
Yeah, I mean, just you know. Internally, we know what the scoring system is and how to understand it, and we can see a score right away, and we know where it is in the range. But that's not the way it works for everybody because the system is new to a lot of people. But
yeah,
you know, seeing it and thinking of it in that satisfaction survey where you have a 10-point scale, and you know, 5 is neither satisfied nor dissatisfied, I think it makes it a little bit easier for people to understand that once you get above 5, you know, you're starting to be satisfied with the cigar. So you can easily see that if you're getting a high 6s or you're getting a low 7s. That's a pretty good score. And then if you start looking at, you know, our overall scoring rating for all the cigars we've done, you know, if you're in the 7s, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, do you guys, I mean, I would say below that 5 is I mean, do you guys have scores below that 5 at times?
Yeah, we've had cigars that made it into the threes.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, we do have, you know, low scores and things like that. So, you know, you're starting to be dissatisfied with the cigar at that point. Either the flavor is just not working out or the construction is really poor and that's affecting flavor and things like that. So it does happen.
You know, I go Half Wheel. They get a lot of criticism for their scoring, right?
Right.
Is there anything wrong with their scoring?
No, I think it's spot on. I think, you know, what they do is great. They use a lot more of the 100-point scale than a lot of other sites.
They have a wider range. I think you talked about that.
You'll see, you know, it's not common, but you see it fairly frequently with cigar scoring in the 70s. And that's not something that a lot of other people will do.
I think where they get into trouble, not they get into trouble, because it's almost unheard of to see a cigar score below 80.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's heresy.
Right.
That when you get that scar, when you get that in the 70s, it so much stands out.
Yeah.
That's where I think they get, that's what happens is they get a lot of criticism because of that.
Right.
Now, I don't, if you want to, we were very far apart on the official misconduct score, right?
Right.
So, they had their score in the 70s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mine was a 93. I love that cigar, right?
Right.
So I can disagree with them on the score. And I can say I don't think they scored that right, right? I maybe they had it, but in terms of delivering that score, I don't have a problem if that's what their mechanism is to deliver that score.
Right.
I don't think that's fair to pick on them if their criteria in there will dictate that comes, and it's unfortunate happening. You know, one, I feel bad for him, but that's part of the. It's just part of the business. You got to be a big boy out here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm not trying to pick on Juan either, but yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that they use that wide range, it helps. It helps you understand where the cigar places in the you know what cigars are available at the time, because if they're all packed in like this 3 or 4 point window, it's hard for you to differentiate between, you know, 10 different cigars because you just don't know. Like, you know, this one could be 1 point away from the other one, but if you smoked it, you may say this is not even close to being what the score of this other one is. So halfway using that wider range is much more helpful to me if I'm looking at the scores there than if I was looking somewhere else that had that narrow range.
Yeah. One thing that I did early on, right, where I made a mistake is, so all my cigars are multiple smoked at least two times, right? Maybe three or four. But this is where I have a problem with the 100 points, because not every cigar can score 100 points every time. I just don't think it can happen, right? But I'd have that one that would come through maybe at a 77.
Yeah.
And I was, well, that was a dud. Take it out of that.
Right.
Now I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So that will bring the score down.
Yeah, I think you have to show the real world experience of what you would get out of a box of cigars in a humidor.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree.
You can't just show the way that the good ones work. You have to show how they work in as a whole.
What if you get a cigar from IPCPR?
Right.
And you decide to review it and score it, and it comes out of 4.8. Would you put that 4.8 out there on developing palates?
I would. I mean, I'd probably check in with the company and just verify that this wasn't some, you know, pre-release blend, that it was the actual thing that was going to be delivered to shops. And if that was the cigar that was going to be there, then that's the score it's going to get.
But don't tell them. I wouldn't tell them the score. I'd ask them a question.
Yeah.
If you tell them the score, then you know, they're going to say, oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, it's different. Right. We'll send you a new one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that would happen is that, you know, like, oh, that one's, you know, you got a bad one or you got a, you know, bad batch or whatever. We want to send you some difference. We don't want them to cherry pick what they set, you know, what we get from them in order to be able to do the review. We want to review as if, you know, it was just something that we grabbed, you know, out of a box in a humidor somewhere.
Another thing I changed in recent years was the idea of giving someone a heads up on the score, whether it's good or bad.
Right.
Now I just don't give them the heads up.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary. I think they should see it when everybody else sees it.
Yeah, I there's not a lot of cigars. Like I said, I have a narrower range. It's just the way it works out. I want to widen that range, both higher and lower.
Mm-hmm.
But at the point, I'm like, well, I think if you're giving me the cigar, it's in my hands at that point. And,
right.
You know, it's just going to be what it is right now.
Exactly.
So, you know, there's a part of me that says I've taken X number of hours to research the cigar, review the cigar. And here's the thing, and I heard Charlie say this, it's not fun reviewing a bad cigar.
Right.
It's not fun writing a bad review.
Yeah, it's true.
It's, I mean, they, it's not
you know, I mean, some people may get enjoyment out of bashing a cigar, but it's not. I think most of us, that's not the case. I mean, we want every cigar to do very well. We want to enjoy our experience. But as doing reviews is, you're just reporting on your experience. And if it's a good one, it gets a good score. If it's a bad one, it gets a bad score.
Yeah, yeah. The it's you know, I totally agree with you on that. That's it's not, and here's the thing, it's not fun getting those phone calls,
right?
So those are the always the ones I get as far as that goes.
Yep.
So yeah, I guess it's interesting. I think the lower end of the scores, I'd like to see some more lower scores out there.
Yeah.
To say not to kill a cigar, but yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's more helpful in being in for, I think, for consumers to be able to, you know, get some feedback and help them make an informed decision if they have a wider range to be able to see how it performed.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you want to hit on that?
I don't think so.
I want to mention one other thing. So, I mean, we kind of talked about some kind of shocking news today out of Drew Estate, Sam Morales departing.
Yeah, that was big news.
He's done, I mean, the job he's done there, mm-hmm. You can't say enough about the job he's done there.
Oh yeah, man! Putting the current marketing team together, and the brands management and stuff like that, it's been a fantastic change there since he's been there.
Yeah, you know, I got to sit down with Sam about 2 years ago, right before we started Primetime. I went into the office down there. I spent the day with him, and I got a whole new respect for this guy. And he's a kid; he's not even 30. This guy. And I saw what he's doing down there. And you remember how Drew Estate was 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. Yeah. If not, but I'm sure it was very chaotic. And he brought this whole structure into the marketing thing. And he kept Drew Estate. I think he kept Drew Estate creative juices flowing, maybe when the product innovation wasn't there for a while.
Exactly.
So I want to wish him the best of luck, you know, whatever he decides to do. I'm not sure, you know, what he's going to do. Sounded like he was going to take a little time off, and good for him on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. Definitely looking forward to what he does next.
Oh, I think he can. I think he can write his own ticket. I mean, I think he's going to have a good resume. So, you know, like I said, best of luck to him as well. You know, very. You know, it's funny. I learned a lot from him. Mm-hmm. The older guy learning from the younger guy. I kind of told him that. So, today, and I, you know, so. Like I said, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what Drew Estate goes with this right now.
Yep.
You know, are they going to bring a more seasoned marketing, a more traditional marketing guy? Or are they going to go try to bring another? Sam was kind of a little bit of an edgy marketing guy, you know?
Yeah.
Younger, you know, guy. So I think it's going to be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Anyway, anything else you want to hit this week?
I don't think so.
Okay. That's going to, before, just a couple of programming notes. Bear and I will be doing Special Edition 38 on Tuesday. We're going to have Scott Pierce from IPCBR as our interview.
Nice.
There will be no Primetime show next Thursday. So we will be back with Primetime on September 6th, and we have scheduled the hand roll, guys. So we had to reschedule them once, so hopefully that all works out. So stay tuned. And then Terrence Riley, who was supposed to be last week, he's been moved to the 13th, so he'll be the week after.
Yep.
All right. Well, I want to thank Justo Arroyo again. He's already gone, by the way. So he had a long day. So, thank him as well. Thanks to Preston Gray and Louie here at Tailored Smoke. Thank you, Aaron, as well.
Yep.
I know it's never easy being on the other end of a remote sometimes. So I do appreciate you, as always, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And thanks to our listeners and everybody. That's going to wrap up episode 64 of the Primetime Show before midnight this week. We will see everybody on Tuesday night. Have a great night, everybody.
See you guys.